Oh, good God.
Hello, and welcome.
Welcome
to this week's episode 251
of
I Said God Damn.
Do I just fucking move this every time?
Probably.
So dumb. How dumb of me.
How dumb of you. I try to keep mine on a swivel, so it's just like in and out real quick.
Smart.
Yeah, I said try.
I'll try to do that also.
Take some advice, which I...
God damn it, my internet went out again.
Oh no.
What the fuck is going on?
God damn!
Anyway.
Oh, we both have fucking mic dangles.
We do. We call them medangles.
Medangles.
McDangles.
Like, get it? Dangles.
For like mic dangles.
Yeah, I get
it. You got
it.
There's so many things wrong with my setup anymore, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Anymore? That's a weird word to say there.
Anymore. You know, like before it was fine and now it's just real bad. You know?
Recently.
Yeah, I
would
guess
be
so.
A more appropriate word, maybe.
Hey, don't make fun of the words that are available in my brain right now.
All right.
I have been through some trauma.
That's true.
Do you want to hear my goddamn?
Yes. I do.
I finally got that colonoscopy and that endoscopy.
Ooh, yeah. How'd that go?
It was the worst.
I'm really sad you didn't let me drive you. I would have loved to see you fucking loopy after.
It wasn't that exciting. It was like I was.
That's because you weren't with me.
That's true. But Lee was there, and I don't think I did anything silly. And it was just, like, I was awake and aware, but, like, to move, I was like, woo.
Ooh.
You know?
Was it fun? A little bit?
No. I mean, it wasn't bad.
But, like, you
the
weren't...
actual procedure itself, a breeze. The fucking prep. The prep.
It happened in college.
The procedure.
No, the prep was in college. Oh, the procedure.
Yeah, no.
That's why it was so easy.
I got you.
But I'm...
I got you.
Just kidding.
No, the prep the fucking day before where you have to drink... a literal gallon of laxative.
That's terrible.
And you just shit until it comes out clear. If you've never had a colonoscopy, FYI, this is what happens. You have to chug this god-awful, grotesque-tasting stuff.
Ugh.
And they give you a flavor packet. Mm. And by the way, it's like the size of an emergency flavor packet into
a gallon
of water.
You're like, can I get some Kool-Aid?
Does nothing. It did absolutely nothing. And I had to split it up over 2 days. So, like, the night before I started, and then the morning of, I finished.
Yeah.
Well, the night before, I did, like, a little bit cold water. Like, I had forgotten until the last second. I was like, oh, shit, and I put my gallon of water in the freezer.
Oh, my God.
So, it was cold. It tasted cold. It tasted like what I would drink my water as. No big deal. Fucking disgusting. It's, like, slightly slimy or something, and
ew.
Bitter and gross and weird, and, like, it doesn't have... When you take a sip, you're like, it's not that bad. It's kind of salty and weird, but when you have to chug it, it's like... Bleh! Like, I almost threw up so many times.
Ew.
So many times. There's no nice way to do it, and you have to do it 8 ounces every 10 minutes, and as soon as you
10 minutes?
Every 10 minutes.
This is, like, the power hour of shots.
It's power hour of 8 ounces. That's a cup, in case you're wondering.
Power hour of fucking... laxatives.
Terrible. Do not recommend. 0 out of 0. I went through exactly one roll of toilet paper. Oh my God. I had to use my kid's butt rash cream on my asshole because one point it was bleeding. Sorry, guys. Another update on my asshole.
Nobody wants to hear about this girl's dirty asshole.
And it was actually pretty clean because that shit, you poop until it comes out looking like piss, basically. And it's just like waterfall peeing out. And it's like so much.
Oh, this is terrible.
It was traumatic. I'm not kidding. And you're not allowed to eat, so you're on a liquid diet, which means you're fucking starving.
Yeah.
And you can't leave the... I would set my timer for 10 minutes, immediately run to go shit, because my body is very efficient. And the timer would go off while I was shitting. One time, I was chugging laxative while shitting at the same time. And I'm like, this is so fucking dumb.
Like, couldn't you just wait until it's clear? Like, you only need a certain amount of laxative?
It says all over the doc, like, there's multiple places where it's like, you have to drink the whole thing. Like, even if you think you're running clear, you have to drink the whole thing, or else you run the risk of going in and they'll tell you have to reschedule if you didn't drink the whole fucking thing. Because they'll see a chunk. I don't fucking know.
Oh, my God.
They're like, we don't want to deal with poop, so you have to go to extreme measures.
I literally, honestly, the whole time I was chugging this shit, I was like, I cannot. You're supposed to start this in like your 40s or some shit. And I'm like 35, 36. I don't know how old we are. But anyway. I was getting cold sweats thinking about having to do this again in my 40s.
Oh, my God.
It's like, I never want to do this again in my life. And I hadn't even had the procedure yet. This was just the prep.
Oh, no.
0 out of 0. Negative 800 out of 0. Awful. awful, awful. And I'm not being a little bitch. Mm. It fucking sucked.
There's a guy that I work with who's dealing with some stomach issues right now. And so he's had to do this like multiple times in the past couple of months. And he tells me about it all the time. He's like, oh, I just mix it with some ginger ale or some Sprite. Like, no. I put a little bit of Sprite in it to make it, like, you know, give it a little something because the flavor packet isn't good.
He doesn't do shit.
A trooper about it.
Well, you know, our friend Darcy has to do it all the time, too.
Yeah. Oh, does she? That's terrible.
She is such a, she deserves an award. Ugh. She needs a massage every night for the rest of her life for enduring this. And I swear to you, I'm not being a little bitch. It's just awful. Like, there's got to be a pill.
I don't think that... Yeah, there has to be a pill. I don't think that there is a physical way that I could get that much in my body. I mean, I guess it comes out.
Honestly, but like, give me a pill to make me shit myself, and I will chug that amount of water. I don't mind chugging the water. It's the weird shit.
Yeah, it's the weird flavor.
It was, like, coating the back of my throat for some reason and reminding me of, like, you know when you throw up, like, orange Gatorade and it's, like, bitter?
Yeah.
Or like stomach bile and it just kind of hangs out on the back of your throat. It kept giving me that flashback. Every sip I'd take, it felt like I was swallowing vomit. And I'm like, this is atrocious.
That sounds terrible.
Oh my God, it was so bad. And I almost shit myself so many times because like, you don't trust a fart.
You know,
absolutely not.
Things are starting to come together now because Darcy likes sour beer. And that, to me, tastes like vomit. So maybe she likes it. Did she say she didn't like it? Maybe
she was coaching me through the whole thing. She was like, "Your girl..." Yeah, but not helpfully. She was like, I was like, oh my God.
It's gonna suck.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, only 4 cups in. And she was like, girl, you got a long way to go. I'm like, no.
Oh, no.
No, but she was really helpful. Because she's the one who was telling me, her and Armand were telling me, like, it's just the prep that sucks. The actual procedure isn't that bad. So I really wasn't that nervous going into the procedure, which normally I'd be freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I got there, the actual procedure itself was super easy. They gave me some medicine. I passed the book out. And they had to do an endoscopy and a colonoscopy. So I guess they start with your mouth first, because that'd be gross if you went the other way. And
they didn't spit roast you? They didn't do it at the same time?
No, they do it different times. Oh. But so I fell asleep with
like, they have different doctors for different holes.
No, same doctor. I'm pretty sure. Fuck, I don't know. I was out. So I passed the fuck out. The lady was like, some people stay awake and some people go to sleep. And I was like, Good night. I want a nap.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're about to have the best nap ever. So I fall asleep. And when I come to, they're in the middle of the colonoscopy still.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I'm facing a different way in the room than I was when I fell asleep.
This is different.
And there's a television right in front of my face of what they're doing. So I'm just like watching them move around my bowels. And then what was the worst part of the whole procedure, which really wasn't that bad, is it was a little crampy when they would like move around.
Yeah.
Like they hit one point and I kind of went, like, don't like that, you know? It kind of felt like when you really got a shit for a minute, but not at your butthole, but like in your stomach when it cramps.
Like period poos.
Mm-hmm. When you're like, that's not going to be good. It felt like that. And the doctor's like, I know, it's a little tight here. And I was like, I don't know what that means because I was so fucking out of it.
Got it. Super tight fucking colon.
Bowels, evidently. I don't know. Or he's going around a corner. You know how they're just like shoved in you? Yeah. I don't fucking know.
You know how they're just shoved in you?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know how there was no planning whatsoever when it like, came to the bowels?
Yeah.
The intestines?
Just fucking all those loopy ropes, just shove them in there. That's what he was navigating through. So I imagine he was like unfolding them or something. And it wasn't great. Or maybe he was taking biopsies. I don't fucking know. But I do know that I was kind of out of it. But it didn't hurt. It was just kind of like a little uncomfortable sometimes. And the worst part was I had the fucking hiccups.
Oh, no.
I was like, be careful. Yeah. I heard them say something like, oh, she's got the hiccups. And I was like, Anyway, and then they got me the fuck out of there because I was only awake for like a minute or two right before they were done.
Yeah.
Got me the fuck out of there. Turns out they took a couple biopsies in my stomach. Mm. And they took a couple from my bowels, and they removed a polyp. Who knew I had a polyp?
Ooh, a little polyp hanging out in there?
Yeah, and now I feel like I can feel everywhere that they took those. Like, if I drink coffee this morning, there's one spot on my stomach that's sore on the inside. Like, whenever, it's like when you
that's
eat something.
That's kind of feels so strange.
Yeah, you know when you eat something spicy on your belly, and you're like, ooh, it's just not sitting right?
You can feel where it, like where
touches.
It is.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. And same with my bowels. Like, there's one spot that I'm like, ow.
Hmm.
So I'm probably just imagining it and being super freaked out for no reason because I overthink everything. But I'm pretty sure that I'm going to have an ulcer.
I think you're fine.
Yeah. And the doctor was like,
you might have an ulcer.
No, he was like, we took some samples for some like inflammatory shit to test. I don't know. And then the polyp, they're going to test for cancer. But he's like, nah, it's usually all precancerous. So like literally didn't seem that concerned. And I was appalled that I have a polyp in
there. I think polyps are super normal.
I think so, too.
I think, like, every mean shit, you might get a polyp. And listen.
I'm surprised I only had one.
Honestly.
Anyway, so that's my update. If you ever have to get a colonoscopy or endoscopy, don't be afraid of the actual procedure. Be terrified of the prep.
Wow, that sucks. That sounds super shitty.
Yeah, it was very... And I had my first normal poop today, in case anybody was wondering.
Aw, you're just like Hank.
Yeah.
He's pooping normal now, too. He had nothing in his belly. And yeah, he's back and doing good for everyone who was concernicus. Would you like to hear my goddamn?
Yes. Let me set my cup down so that you don't hear ice fucking clinking around.
It is simply the fact that my chickies are hatching.
At this very moment?
Actually, I think, well, when people are listening, yeah, maybe at this very moment. And they're coming in just a couple days, and I'm so fucking excited.
Hold up. How do they know when they're going to hatch?
I don't know.
Like, do they hatch them?
Yeah, they hatch them.
Do they swim, or, like, do you just get them to a certain point?
I think they know batches. They've been doing it for long enough.
That makes sense.
They're like, we have 80,000 chickens.
So it's not like a pregnant lady where it's like,
any day
9 months-ish.
Yeah, well, I think it depends, but they know, like, within a couple of days, I guess. Or maybe they fucking hatch them. I don't know.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah, but that's all. I'm so fucking excited, and my little babies are coming, and Brandon already has the fucking chicken bug where he's like, let's get some more.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, load them up. Let's get a bunch.
I'm sad we didn't get any black and white ones, and I'm like, I'm sad too, man.
Let's get one. Should we throw them on there?
Yeah. And now he wants, because I told him, like, we're not eating these chickens. Even if they stop producing eggs, like, sorry about it. They are pets, right?
They're mine.
Fish are friends, not food.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not agree with that, but he's accepting it. He's allowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, well, this chicken coop is, like, super easy to build. And by super easy, I mean all it takes is a couple weekends, fights, and a lot of money. And, like, I don't know, 400 trips to Home Depot, I think, if I'm counting correctly. But to him, that's easy. And so I was like, hell yeah, man, let's make another one. He's like, let's fucking do it again. And this one, we'll get, like, meat chickens, and those will be, like, for eating. So you'll have your pets.
So don't get attached.
These ones will be for eating. And I was like, they can't see each other. And no. But, like,
well, see, my whole thing is like, yes, I'm all for chickens as pets, and I get not wanting to eat your pet, but if you know how long a chicken lives, and if it's in, like, the last year of its life, what if you just it out pretty quick and easy and then eat the chicken? Because, you know, like, it's going to die anyway, mm-hmm. and then instead of finding it all traumatic, you can give it its best last day ever, and then you could use all of the chicken. Like, if I were a chicken, I'd be like, use me.
Use me. I think it's going to severely depend on how this whole thing goes.
Okay. What if they're all assholes? Would you eat them?
Maybe.
Maybe. You do eat chicken.
I do eat chicken. I'm not a vegetarian by any means, but, like, I don't want to look my food in the eyes and love it and fucking give it little loves and stuff.
Yeah. I can understand that.
And then be like, anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, Becky.
I feel like in my fucked up brain, I can compartmentalize my love for a chicken. Like, I could be like, I love you up until, like, a year before you're going to die. And then I could be like,
a year?
I don't know.
You, like, give them a good day. Cut off their fucking last year.
Yeah. I would find a way.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
I would find a way so that the chicken doesn't know they're going to die. Right? Like, they're fucking. It's just like.
Never see it coming.
You know those people on the Titan that just, like, fucking imploded?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
You're just going to implode the chicken real quick. Let's go to the depths.
Listen, I haven't come up with an ultimate plan, but I'm just saying I could compartmentalize my love that way. I do it all the time with my pets that are dying. That's a fucking false fact because I always die when my pets die. But, like, I start to, like, detach myself from things that I know are going to die. Isn't that awful?
Oh, my God. Well, I hope I never am going to die. I promise.
I have to make a conscious effort not to do it.
Yeah?
I think it's from my upbringing from moving too much. Like, I could cut people off instantly.
Oh, I can cut people off. Yeah. No problem. Like, you could be dead to me.
Yeah.
But pets? They're so sweet.
They are so sweet. All right, you ready for some murder?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay, this week's case is brought to you by a very popular and familiar one.
Ooh, okay.
But, you know, interestingly enough, because I don't actually hold the credentials to own a fucking true crime podcast, I didn't know all these details. So I'm going to share them with you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because I bet you don't either.
I bet I don't also.
But I remember when this shit happened. So
really?
Yeah.
Is it Ariel Castro?
No.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Why?
I was just wondering. That okay. was a semi, I remember when it happened, and also, like, never really looked into it.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't even know him.
I don't even know.
He's the guy that kept all the girls in his house, and then one of them broke out, and there was a dude outside, and it was a happened to be a black dude, and then he was like, a white woman came running to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's when you know.
That was Jody. Something or other, right?
No. Hmm. Maybe. Okay. Maybe that was the name of the lady. I don't remember her name.
Okay.
It was Ariel Castro. Was the guy. I don't remember.
Hmm. I remember that story.
Either way.
Nope, not that one. Okay, I'm going to tell you about Lee Boyd Malvo and John Allen Williams.
Two people. Okay. And Lee Boy?
Lee Boy.
Is that his name?
Lee Boyd.
Oh.
Malvo. Forever hence known as Lee.
Yes. Here, forth.
Okay, so Lee Malvo was born February 18th, 1985, in Kingston, Jamaica, Yaman.
Oh, okay.
To Una James and Leslie Malvo. Lee grew up in a poverty-stricken town of Jamaica, far from the resort beach lifestyle that you think of when you say Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And his father has fond memories of taking Lee to ride his bike up and down the streets when he was young. And every night after work, they would go to this local ice cream shop, and they would get Lee's favorite ice cream cone, which was grape nut flavored. I don't know what the fuck flavor grape nut is, because grape nut in my world is like granola cereal.
Yeah.
But that anyway.
Doesn't sound good, but
no,
I mean.
No, it's his favorite.
Peace be with you, dude.
Favorite.
And it's Lee's like when people are like, pistachio's my favorite. No, it's like, not.
Get out of here,
no,
psycho.
No, it's fucking not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you have to be weird?
It's always old people.
It is. Sorry, pistachio is your favorite.
I know. I actually did a debate one day. Debate. One day in high school over how gross mint chocolate chip ice cream was. And I won. Just in case you're wondering.
I was wondering. And also, I don't find that offensive.
I really don't either, but I had to. Like, you know when they put you on debate teams and they're like, you don't get to pick which side you're on?
Yeah, you just have to argue and research your point or whatever.
Yeah. I think I won solely on the reason that it's green. I don't really remember.
Everyone was like, that was a bad choice.
But joke's on me because it's my kid's favorite ice cream. So
really?
It's always in my house.
Interesting.
It's really not that bad.
We never have ice cream.
What?
And then when we do, my kids are like, can I have it? And I'm like, bitch, you thought. It's fucking mine.
Get out of here.
And then I eat it when they're not around or when they're sleeping. And then they come out in the morning or whatever day. And they're like, where's the ice cream? I'm like, mm-mm.
That's me and chips with my kids.
They get so sad. Like, you didn't share? Uh-huh. No, I didn't.
Same. I'll get those, like, what are they, corn chips with a hint of lime?
Oh, yeah.
And they'll be like, where are the sour chips? I'm like, mama ate those last night.
Those are gone.
Yeah. I got the family size back. For me.
I have the family size bag of fucking popcorn down here.
Yeah, exactly. That's for me.
Yeah,
that's my meal.
Kids will never know that exists.
Exactly. Okay, so he ate grape nut. And I guess what he would do is eat the ice cream off the top, and then he would bite the hole in the bottom of the cone, and then the ice cream would, like, drip down his arm and all this cute shit. He was 4, right?
Oh, okay.
So he was really little.
And then he was like, that's inefficient.
Well, he was little.
Like, I didn't know he was 4.
It's endearing looking back, right?
Yeah. Cute.
How cute. He was an adorable child.
Yeah. Love it.
That is going to go on to do awful things.
Oh, no.
So, and then he'd be like, Dad, can I have another? And his dad would always be like, hell yeah, you can have another. And these are like his dad's fond memories of him.
All right.
He was a good kid all through his childhood. He was very kind and polite and well-mannered. His father and mother separated when he was little because his father would get this. He was like a masonry. No, is that what it's called when you do brickwork? Masonry?
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 He What's did a masonry. Maybe he's
That's
a masonist.
Like pray?
I don't know. Masonry? Monastery.
Monastery. God damn it. Hate it when I'm dumb. Anyway, okay, so he did some fucking brick. He built shit.
All
he was
right.
into construction.
He's a little bricklayer. That's what we'll call him.
Indubitably. And so, you know, like I said, he grew up in this little poverty-stricken town, so there wasn't a lot of work there. So often what his dad would do is he would travel for work, and he would send money back to the family.
Okay.
And at this point in time, right before his parents separated, his dad had gotten a job off the island building some casino or resort or some shit like that. And he would send $300 back of his paycheck all the time.
Is that a lot?
It was for them, yeah. Okay. I'm sure it still is. So he's away making money, sending back $300, which was enough for them to live on. Like, in this poverty-stricken town, they had a nice, stable house.
Yeah.
Lee was doing great in school. The mom, I think, was a stay-at-home mom. She was very religious and very overbearing is how she's described. And so, like, even though Lee wanted to do a lot of different things with his life. Like, later on, I'll tell you, he wanted to be a pilot when he grew up. His mom was like, fuck that. You're going to be a doctor or whatever. I don't know. Just, like, wanted different things for him, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always some sort of, like, conflict. Where his dad was pretty laid back in the parenting world, like every fucking dad is. It sounds pretty common.
Yeah.
But anyway, so his dad would go work off the island, send money back, and then his mom started to think that the dad was having an affair.
Ooh.
And that he had actually gotten a raise and wasn't sending the money back. And so she would constantly, like, nag him about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one day he comes back to visit the family, and his dad says, like, I hated being away from my kid. I literally did it just so he could have a happy life.
Aww.
Yeah. His dad seems really nice. But also, you never know, right?
Like, yeah, I don't know. Of course.
You're fucking coming from
It's also the dad's hindsight. Retelling.
Yeah, exactly. And the mom doesn't offer interviews often.
Mm.
But the dad does.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's going to be however
his narrative.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, he comes back to visit. She's nagging him. And homie just punches her in the jaw.
Dad does?
Dad does. Knocks a tooth out. But you're going to love her revenge. Because the next day she was like, not in my fucking house. And she grabbed a machete and, like, attacked the dad and tried to cut off his hand that punched her. And she didn't successfully cut it off. He ended up in the hospital. I don't know if it affected his work or whatever. But, like, goddamn. Fucking
goddamn.
Find out,
she's
huh?
a bad bitch.
Yeah. And she is not playing that fucking game. So, not a great household. Not a great situation.
Seems like something maybe a kid shouldn't be around, but
exactly,
okay.
Exactly. So, like I said, they separated after that incident. And Lee's mom took all of the money from the family's bank account when his dad was, like, working one day, and then just moved her and 5-year-old Lee out of the house, and they lived in Jamaica up until he was 15. She didn't have any money, right? She ended up opening some store, like clothing store, grocery store, or something like that. And so that's what paid their bills. But they would bounce around from family to family or from home to home. So he didn't have a stable home living with his mom. And oftentimes she would have to leave for work, similar to what the dad did. So she would have to leave him with, like, friends or family.
Oh, God, that sucks.
Yeah, it's really sad. So it wasn't, like, a very stable childhood.
Yeah.
And the father didn't know where they were. Right? Because she just scooped up and left. And when he came home and found everybody was missing, he was, like, devastated because he looked forward to his little boy and all that shit. And he would look everywhere for them and could never find them. So when Lee was around 10, he actually found his father. Like, he went back to the street that his dad would always take him riding the bike on and go get the ice cream. And I guess they would also play dominoes on the street.
Yeah.
So Lee at 10 ran away from home, found his dad. And basically, his dad, like, lost his shit. Like, oh, my God. Like, I miss you so much. It had been so long since 5 years since he had seen his little boy,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. Well, I guess because of the instability of everything, Lee really wanted his dad to save him. Like, take me home. Take me back. I don't want to live with mom. She was very overbearing, made him go to a lot of Christian schools. He always did really well in school, and everybody loved him and said, like, he was a great kid. He was so polite to adults and parents and stuff like that and teachers.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just didn't have a stable life, and he remembered, when I lived with my dad, I had a stable life.
Yeah.
And so he, like, basically, you know, begged to be taken back, and his dad was basically, like, I don't think he realized the severity, or I don't really know, but his dad was like, I don't want her back in my life. Like, no way.
Yeah.
No way. We're not doing that.
He's like, actually, it's been pretty chill without her.
Yeah. Like, I haven't had a machete attack in exactly 5 years. I'd like to keep it that way.
Yeah.
But maybe it was one of those scenarios that once they broke up and separated, he realized how overbearing she was.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was just sowing his wild oats. I don't really fucking know. But
I mean, any relationship that ends with a machete attack.
Not like, good.
Probably not great.
No.
Even if it was like, oh, man, I guess it was my fault.
Yeah.
Maybe just stay away from these people.
Yeah, not the best.
Yeah.
And the father asked Lee, like, hey, tell me where you live. I want to be a part of your life still. Like, even though we can't live together, I still want to be a part of your life. But Lee was terrified to tell him anything because he knew he'd get in a lot of trouble by his mom. So he would never tell his dad where he lived. Also, when he was bouncing from school to school, like living with his mom between 5 and 15, she would put on enrollment papers that his dad was deceased. And his dad found out later, and he was like, oh, shit, my kid thinks I'm dead.
That's
sad. But eventually he found out he wasn't and went looking for him, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so at the age of 15, Lee's mom gets offered a job, and so they have to move to Antigua. And they do that.
Where the fuck is that?
It's fucking around there. I don't know.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Sure, yeah.
Should have Googled it.
All right, fair enough. It just sounds like it's in Canada to me.
No,
I don't
it's like
know
in Jamaica.
Okay.
There's like Montego Bay, Antigua. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to take you to Jamaica. I'm a pretty mama. Hilario, Montego, baby, why don't we go to Antigua? Just kidding. Anyway, it's one of those jobs that she had to take again to, like, be able to pay for shit.
Yeah. Right? Got it. Also, Critty, that is singing.
What? What'd she say?
It was that TikTok. Erin's singing? Oh.
Also, I want to note about bouncing around from house to house. A lot of the times when his mom would leave and the family would, like, take over caring for Lee, they loved him so much that they wanted to adopt him.
Aww.
Like, he was a great kid. And yeah. It was right before his mom came to, like, get him from Antigua. He was living his best life. The family was like, do you want me to adopt you? And he was, like, blown away, like, abso-fucking-lutely. I would love that. Like, he didn't really like living with his mom.
Yeah.
And then his mom showed up one day, and she was, like, the lady was like, oh, look who's at the door. And so Lee comes running in all excited, thinking it's a surprise. And when he saw it was his mom, his face just, like, dropped. And he was started crying. And he's like, don't let her take me. Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
And then she took him to Antigua. And the lady was like, dude, that's your mom. Like, yeah. I can't take you. You got to go with your mom.
Yeah.
So really good kid, right? In Antigua, he attended a Seventh-day Adventist school, which is a Christian school, okay. Which was known
for... Seventh-day? Is that Sunday school?
Must be. I don't fucking know.
Okay.
It's Jamaica, man.
Things are different.
Things are different. They're way more laid back there. Everything's like a Christian school or some shit. I'm sure it was like, because she always tried to get him into fancy schools. So yeah. I'm sure this is like how you get into like a charter school or
something. Yeah, like a private school or something.
Yeah, exactly. But he was known for being very smart, very friendly. However, his mother left him to live on his own because she had to go take a job, like mm-hmm. out of town or whatever. And so he was living in a single room plywood shack without electricity and running water. So times were fucking tough for him.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds fucking awful.
Great. And he's 15. It was in Antigua where Lee met a man by the name of John Allen Muhammad. And mm-hmm. he lived about a block away or so and kind of took him under his wing as his son. So John Allen Williams, he was actually born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on December 31st, 1960.
Okay.
So he's like, I don't know, 20, 30 years, 20 some, 30 something years older than him.
Yeah.
Roughly. I don't know. A little less than 30. And he grew up in New Orleans and joined the U.S. Army in the mid-1980s. Mm-hmm. In 1987, he joined the Nation of Islam and changed his surname to Muhammad. And for those who are not aware, the Nation of Islam is a black nationalist organization that combines elements of traditional Islam and black nationalist ideas and promotes racial unity and self-helping among African Americans. That obviously was a Google fucking thing.
Yeah.
Definition. But just so we're all aware, there's many critiques about the religion, but we're not here to discuss that.
Yeah.
So I guess we're here to discuss it a little bit. John was married and had had children, but he and his wife were separated, and he lost custody of those kids.
Oh, and then he was like, check this out. I found one.
Found one. His name is Lee, and he lives in Jamaica. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, John had a history of domestic violence, and he was known to be very controlling and manipulative.
Rude.
So maybe not the best role model for Lee.
Yeah.
But when John saw that this custody battle with his children was going wrong back in the U.S., he scooped them up and flew them to Antigua. So he was on the run.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's what brought him there. So he had three children there living with him. And then he finds Lee and he's like, hey, why not make it four?
Yeah. Were his kids roughly the same age as Lee?
I think one was because it mentioned that they often like hung out and played video games or some shit together.
Okay.
But I don't know. I didn't write down their ages.
It's a little bit weird for a grown man to be taking interest in a teenage boy.
Right.
When you have your own.
Okay. So here's the thing. Everybody who knows John was like, he absolutely fucking loved his children. Yeah. Like to have them taken away is the worst thing you could do for him. He was a good dad, despite all the other shit.
Despite all the abuse.
Allegedly, he was a good dad. And when he was in Antigua, everybody was like around the neighborhood. All the kids took to him. He was very fun, but also would discipline them. Like he'd be like, drop and give me 50, like shit like that. Hmm. But it was like to better them.
Yeah. Like and I'm doing this for you.
Yeah. And so like all the parents and stuff in the neighborhood really liked him.
Okay.
And he was trusted.
Mm-hmm.
He became a local hero, actually, because he'd always offer help and advice to not only the children, but the people of the village. So, like, if they...
Bro, sort your own shit out first. You're on the run.
Right?
You're gonna offer advice to people?
No,
he's... Oh, what you gotta do is buy 3 extra tickets. No birth certificates. Also, dodge security.
Bail.
Yeah.
You're not far off. Because he literally does, like, fraud U.S. immigration documentation for people. And he's like, you know... For the right price, I can get it for you. Anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000.
Oh, my gosh.
But he also could fix shit because he was like a mechanic or some shit. I don't know. He knew how to fix things and make parts. So if something broke in the town, he could always fix it and repair it.
Yeah.
So he was literally like this local hero.
All right.
And like I said, he started forging these immigration documents. So he was like the go-to guy.
Yeah. He's got all your fucking needs.
Exactly. And so he had offered Lee's mom, because Lee's mom knew that he was hanging out with John. And Lee's mom was comfortable with it. Like, John was a good influence on him.
Yeah.
And so he offered Lee's mom, like, I can forge these documents for you to go work in Florida as a U.S. citizen. And you can make so much more money for your family. And so they did. And she left Lee behind.
Oh, my God.
And she went to fucking Florida.
He was like, I'll forge these documents to get you out of the country so I can take your child.
Exactly. And so now his mom denies any allegations of abandonment or anything. And she says that she always was working her butt off so that she could pay for Lee's education. And she always knew where he was and all this other stuff. But the media has kind of been like, and his dad is like, she fucking abandoned him. Even Lee is like, I was abandoned as a kid.
Well, you can't really leave the country that you...
Yeah. It's a difference in, like,
kidding.
It's a difference in, like, the definition of abandonment.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
She's like, no, I didn't abandon him. I did it for him. And he's like, yeah, but you weren't here.
You left, bro.
you left, and I had to do it alone, aka
gone.
Abandoned.
Yeah, exactly. So by January 2001, Lee had decided to move in with John and his family. So he's not living alone in this plywood hut.
Yeah.
He's living with some other people in a plywood hut that has water and electricity.
Hey, you know, greener pastures.
Exactly. And John began to coach Lee about the Nation of Islam and its practices and beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
He always focused on honor and discipline and personal virtue, and he never really talked about, like, violence or anything like that.
Okay.
Nation of Islam has some, like, anti-Semitism and, like, ties to, like, white power people. Like, what do you call them? Yeah, like, in Stalingrad. And they, like, are like, women suck.
Oh, that sucks.
Yes, there's a lot of critiques about them.
Yeah, yeah, I see. Okay, I'm with you. And so he's doing some missionary work for them?
Yeah, evidently he is. Yes, indeed. But he never focused on the negative parts. He was always, like, you know, like, self-betterment, you know, be aware of yourself, that kind of thing.
He's like, right, if you ignore all this other stuff,
yeah,
racism's not that bad.
It's a great message. Yeah. So now Lee's best friend, who went to school with him, started to notice a change in Lee when he moved in with John. He was like, he used to be really interested in girls and cars and sports, and then all of a sudden he started talking about, like, guns and fucking Islam and shit, and he would start arguing with his peers about the practices of Islam, but he went to a Christian church.
Oh.
So it didn't really go well. Mm-hmm. Or not church, but school.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a great combo, mm-hmm. and he had never talked about it before. So clearly John had an influence on Lee. Then, out of nowhere, Lee stopped going to school. And by spring of 2001, authorities started to catch on that John was in Antigua. And so he was like, they're on my tail. I got to skip locations.
He about to get abandoned again?
No, because in May of 2001, John took his kids and Lee to Miami on forged documentation, where he dropped Lee off with his mother.
Oh.
And then John proceeded to fly his children and himself back to Washington. It was in Seattle, but he was originally from Washington.
Okay.
So he's flying back home.
I thought he was originally from fucking Louisiana.
Well, he was born there. Sorry, okay. I forgot to mention. Then he, like, you know, he joins the military, whatever. He lands in Washington, meets a lady, gets married, has kids, goes through the divorce battle. So he's going back to Washington where the lady is, which is not a great idea because, like, you're on the run. So I don't know if homie's like, I'll just hide in plain sight. Like, what's your fucking plan?
Yeah.
Where? So.
I'm just going to sort this whole thing out.
Yeah. No, but I'll just talk to the cops. Everything's going to be fine. They're not going to mind at all that I kidnapped these 3 children
yeah.
for a couple months. So while in Florida, Lee thrives and he enrolls in high school and he wanted to go to college and become a pilot. But the problem was is that he didn't have a social security number to be able to go to college and take like the SATs and shit. And so Lee's mom was like, well, what if we ask John to legally adopt you and then you'll be issued a social security number and you can go to school and become a pilot and all this cool shit. And so Lee was like, I love this idea. That's great. I love John. I'm sure he'll do it. No big deal. And so Lee's mom buys Lee a bus ticket to go from Florida to Washington.
Jesus.
I know.
So how long does that take? Fucking just 18 years?
18 years. Just got to drop on his doorstep and ask this really heavy loaded question without a fucking phone call first.
Hey man, can you adopt me?
Yeah, exactly. So she buys the ticket, but then she chickens out and she hides the ticket and she's like, I don't want my boy to leave. I don't want that to happen. Aww. Like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But Lee knows where the ticket is and he's like, yoink. And he goes and he steals it and he runs away and he takes that bus and he goes to Lee. In Washington. Yeah. Yeah.
Yoink.
Yoink. So, he runs away to go be with John, right? Well, John's not doing so great back in Washington. He had enrolled his kids in school. And when he did that, his wife had obviously put a bolo out for her children, right? It's like on the National Registry of Missing Children or some shit.
Yeah.
And when their name went on an enrollment, it flagged, and so the authorities came and, like, took the children from John and gave them back to the mother. And then the mother was like, we got to get the fuck away from John because he's dangerous.
Yeah,
like,
he'll just obviously kidnap your fucking kids.
Yeah, and I know what he's capable of, and he's fucking crazy. So she took them and moved to Washington, D.C. and, like, hid from them. But he doesn't know that they're in Washington, D.C., right?
Okay.
And she skips fucking town.
She was like, Washington, going to the other one.
Yeah, he'll never look for me there.
Yeah.
It's on the literal other side of the country. So the family's living their life there. John's all alone back in Washington, and he's living out of, like, what are those called? Like, not hostels, but, like, when churches take you in.
Oh, sanctuaries?
Yeah, something like that. So he's living out of that.
Okay.
Okay, so now it's about a month after John's children have been taken from him when Lee shows up on his doorstep. I don't know how the fuck he knew where he was. Times were different back then, I guess. You could just be like, hey, man, you know where John Muhammad is? And they're like, yeah, I know that, man. He's on the street corner over here.
Oh, John Muhammad? The most
common, basic fucking name.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I think it's probably in the phone books. Maybe he just went to all the different addresses.
And then when he didn't find him, just started going to all the, like, shelters and shit. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, how'd he find him there?
I have no idea, but he found him. Or maybe they were in still contact. I don't know. I don't know.
All right.
Anyway, so he shows up and he's like, hey, John, can I come live with you? And John's like, yeah, it's pretty fucking sick here. Three hots and a cot. I don't know. Anyway, and so they start living together in this mission, whatever.
Okay.
Just to give you a timestamp, we're October 20th of 2001.
Okay.
When Lee shows up on the doorstep.
You remember when this happened?
I remember when this happened, yeah. Okay. You're gonna, too, when I tell you everything.
Okay.
So, together, they started this, like, daily routine under John's, you know, guidance, supervision, bossiness, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lee would go to school, and then he would go to work and work out at the YMCA. They both would work out together. They're gonna get buff. and then they would go to the shooting range and shoot guns.
Okay, cool.
Now, John had a Bushmaster AR-15... that he would carry around in a plastic case and a duffel bag all the time, and that's, like, what they would go shoot at the range. Or
just all the time?
All the time. Like, he was homeless, so
yeah,
he had a duffel bag of his shit, and that was his gun of choice.
Okay.
So their father-son-like relationship started to grow.
Because they're doing all this cool shit together.
But others started to notice a weird change in Lee where he wouldn't speak to, like, he wouldn't speak to people unless John would, like, give him a nod saying it's okay to answer. Like, he became a robot around John.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, he was, like, John's little puppet.
Yeah.
And John would rarely let Lee out of his sight, like, outside in the world. It was always John and Lee together. And he was basically grooming Lee.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
John would also play these tapes at night to get Lee to go to sleep. And they started off with just, like, sleepy time music with some teachings of Islam mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
But after some time, they started to morph into these, like, weird homemade brainwashing tools with hate speeches and more aggressive and vengeful version of the world filled with, like, racially hateful speeches and shit. Like,
oh,
he was, like, getting Lee amped up and telling him this world is awful and, you know, you're a black man in this world and this is what you got to do and blah, 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 right?
Oh, God.
The common messages in these tapes were that America hates blacks and that all prisons were filled with mostly black men, and anyone not in prison is basically forced to go be in the military. Like, America is not for you. Which, not far off.
Yeah, I mean,
but what, pretty aggressive.
Yeah, but it's pretty shitty to, like, indoctrinate your kid in that way.
I know, I don't
like to use that word because of how it is now, but...
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very sensitive subject.
Yeah.
People have very intense feelings about it, but... It's obvious that these tapes and that John's teaching had a major impact on Lee and his outwardly worldview.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, your, like, thought, role model. That's your dad, essentially.
Yeah. Lee thought that, like, people were actively out to kill him.
Oh, God.
Like, not just, like, ooh, be careful.
Yeah.
This world is fucking against you. But it was, like, they're in this bush and they're going to kill you, so be ready. It's like war, you know?
Yeah. This poor kid.
I know.
He's like 16 at this point?
2001. He was born in...
85. So he's like 14.
Something like that.
16. Yeah, he's like 16.
Something like that. Yeah. He's in his like younger mid-teens.
Hmm.
He's very impressionable.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And you get that teenage rage-ness.
Ooh, rage-ness is bad. Yeah. So, in hindsight, psychologists have worked with Lee and have looked at this scenario, and they're like, oh, no doubt that during this time, all of this stuff that was being put into Lee's mind and what he was being forced to do put him in a disassociative state. So, that's why he was like a robot, you know, like, and he didn't know what to do, and he would look to John to know, what is the right answer? What do I do?
That's really sad.
And he wasn't, like, himself anymore.
Yeah.
He was like a shell of who he was.
He was brainwashed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Meanwhile, Lee's mom, her name is Una, by the way. I said it earlier on, but just so I don't have to keep saying his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Una, she's on the hunt for her son who ran away.
Yeah.
And she kept calling, trying to reach Lee, but she could never get a hold of him because he's at, like, a missionary or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then one time, she finally gets through to John, and John basically was blunt and said something along the lines of, like, I have a job to do and I can't rely on a cokehead to get it done, so bye.
Was she a cokehead?
I have no idea what that means. I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah. But he just, like, later. And she didn't, she was like, where's my son?
But hang on.
Questions.
That seems aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she did coke. I don't fucking know. But God, how aggressive.
Yeah.
Unless he meant it in some other way and I just am not understanding out of context.
Well, it could have been like, I'm really busy right now. I have a job to do and I can't rely on cokeheads. Because like.
Yeah, maybe. So I gotta go.
Yeah.
I'm busy. I don't fucking know the context.
I got shit to do.
Either way, inappropriate response to a mom looking for her underage son.
Agreed. Yes.
But Una got majorly concerned that her son was in trouble after this, right? And
yeah.
So she hopped on a Greyhound bus and headed towards Washington.
God damn. I cannot imagine how long that fucking takes.
Dude, my whole family, maybe it's because I grew up in fucking trailer parks or some shit, but, like, my whole family always took Greyhounds. Like, when they were coming to visit, they'd just show up, you know, at a bus stop from, like, another state. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That's how they traveled. They never fucking flew. We were too poor. Greyhound ticket was like $60. My uncle used to get my parents to buy him tickets to come visit us, and then he would sell those tickets to other people for money for like whatever.
Fucked up.
Yeah, then my parents were like, I'm not buying you any more fucking tickets.
Oh, that's pretty fucked up.
So I'm pretty sure it's like what poor people do.
Did they not have cars?
I doubt she did.
Una?
Maybe she did.
Hmm.
I don't really know. I don't know the answer. She probably didn't have a driver's license.
Wondering
she
about
was on
your
illegal documentation.
Now.
Oh, my family? Hell no. They got no money. They were into stealing shit. That uncle ended up in jail so many times. And then my other uncle, brother, ended up in prison. Lost his fucking eye in prison. He's still alive, actually.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Broke his back, too. Crazy shit. He's not in prison anymore.
That's good, I think.
Yeah, I think he should be.
Oh.
Not because he's bad, but I just think it's, like, better for him.
Just, you seem a little calmer.
Yeah, like you're taken care of. You're not climbing in trees and falling out of them and breaking your back.
Oh, God.
Whatever the fuck. I don't know. My mom deals with that. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess it's just cheaper to take a Greyhound bus. Probably takes 500,000 years.
Yeah, I think it would.
But they just drive through the night, so I don't know.
I don't know. I've never been on a bus.
God damn it. Erin, letting your privilege show.
I'm sorry. But my dad and
to
mom,
be fair, I've never been on a Greyhound bus.
Ha, see?
But I've been on a city bus,
I've been on a city bus one time, and we got lost. And I was like, you know what? I'm never going to do this again.
I'm going to take my dad's car.
Yeah, I'm just going to go. But my mom and dad, when they would fly to the East Coast, would then take a bus occasionally to, to wherever the fuck, instead of renting a car, I guess, or whatever. But I'm like, I'm over here. Like, why didn't my grandparents just pick you guys up?
Yeah, different times, man. Like, fuck that. I'm busy.
I guess. And it is like a 2-hour drive, but I feel like I'd still fucking do it.
Yeah, me too. Oh, my God.
I remember my mom was pregnant, and they, like, good luck. Like, here's a fucking bus ticket. And I was baffled when I learned about it.
It was, like, normal. They were, like, pretty sure it's still normal for people. I don't really know.
I don't know.
Okay, so where was I?
Una's on a Greyhound to fucking Washington.
Yeah, she gonna get... But I accidentally did something, and it went all the way to the top of the goddamn page.
Oh, ain't that the worst?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I found it. And when she gets to Washington, she immediately talks to the police, and the police find Lee in John's care and remove him. And they're like, you can't be with this random guy. Your mom's here looking for you. Here you are.
But also, were they then looked at for having fake documents?
Exactly. Okay. So it didn't take long for the U.S. Immigration Service to catch on that they were both there on illegal papers. And on December 19th, both were detained and kept in separate facilities until their release into an INS safe house on January 23rd, 2002.
Oh, my God. How fucking sad.
I know. And so Lee kept telling his mom that they were in great danger, likely because of the propaganda that John was, like, spewing into his head every night.
Yeah, on account of he was still brainwashed and now John's not around. So he's like, what do I do?
Exactly. We're in danger. And he's like, Mom, you don't understand. Like, people are going to kill you. Like, I need to keep you safe. You don't want to be with me because they're after me.
Oh, God.
And so one night in their safe house when Una was cooking dinner, Lee was like, deuces! And he snuck out of the window and he ran back to John.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And Una kept searching for her son and would occasionally spot him and John, like, on the street or getting on a bus or some shit. And she would, like, call to him and he would fucking book it the other way.
What?
And she was like, I'm your mom. Stop running from me. But he was like, mm-mm, don't want to live that life.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. So the father-son, like, duo, they begin to live a life on the run, and they would live their day-to-day by that, like, weird schedule that John had drawn up. Mm-hmm. So they would do those daily exercise routines, and they were super intense. And then John would have them do these, like, quote, training missions where they would hunt each other sniper style in the woods.
Oh, my God.
Around Washington.
Totally.
Right? Totally normal.
Sure.
And Lee started to believe that they really were being hunted and that there were two rules to live by, and that was that you do whatever it takes and that there is no turning back. So that's what was, like, hammered into his head. Mm-hmm. So, like, killing people is an option.
Yeah.
And once you do it, you're fucking done. Like, don't think about it. John would prep Lee on how to handle interrogations by chaining him to a tree in the snow with no clothes on. And, like, he would do that for hours to mentally harden Lee to not give away any kind of information.
This is so fucked up.
It is. And so Lee says that at this point, it was about proving to John that he was tough enough to stick it out because he wanted to gain John's respect.
Yeah.
So he would do it. And then on February 16th, 2002, which was 2 days before Lee's 17th birthday, John gave Lee his first mission. Mm-hmm. So John had a vendetta against a woman named Issa Nichols, who he believed was against him during his divorce and custody battle. I don't know what this woman did, but, like, he's just like, mm-mm, don't like her. She's got to go. So John sent Lee to the woman's home that night, armed with a .45 caliber pistol, with the orders to shoot and kill Issa.
Oh, my God.
What John and Lee didn't know was that at this time, Issa's niece was staying at her house with her infant baby.
Oh, no.
Because the niece was in an abusive relationship, so she was fleeing that relationship and staying with her aunt.
Yeah.
So Lee walked up to the house, and he knocks on the door, and the niece answers the door because she's home alone, and she was, like, in the middle of changing her kid's diaper or some shit, and she stopped to go answer the door, and
Lee didn't have a picture of the person he was supposed to actually kill?
I guess not, because he killed her instantly.
Oh, my God.
I know. He just shot her, I think, in the head. This was, like, a major test for Lee, according to his, like, rite of passage with John. Mm-hmm. And even though he got the wrong target and everything, John was like, all right, you're cool. Like, you can be in my fan club.
Oh, my God.
I know. And nobody knew who fucking killed this woman, right? Like, it was just some random. Like,
yeah,
there were no witnesses.
Yeah, random attack.
Exactly.
Did everybody blame her abusive ex?
Oh, I don't really know. I didn't really look up much about it. But this poor woman just got shot right in the face, man. Can you imagine answering the door, too, and then being like, done, and your little baby's still in there? I don't know the details. Like, I don't know how long it took for anybody to find out.
No, I hope not. Yeah. That'd be so fucking sad.
Yeah. So.
But also, I would never answer the door, so.
Yeah. Fuck that. Never answer. I don't know that person.
No. You don't need anything.
Nope. So between February and October of 2002, Lee and John traveled by bus around the United States, living in shelters and robbing and killing people as needed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just, like, casually went to fucking full-on murder?
Yeah. Like, oh, I want his fucking wallet. Bang, bang, give me your wallet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
So on March 19th in Tucson, Arizona, a 60-year-old man who was just clipping balls, not clipping. You know what I mean?
You know, it's that yearly time. Gotta trim up my ball sack.
Gotta trim them back. Who else need a little clipping? Rather, he was chipping balls.
Oh, okay.
At a golf course. And he was murdered by the duo. Then on September 5th in Clinton, Maryland, a restaurant owner by the name of Paul LaRuffa was shot 6 times with a .22 caliber handgun and robbed for $3,000 and a laptop.
Oh.
The duo used this money to buy a 1999 blue Chevrolet Caprice.
Hmm.
Then, on September 14th, in Silver Spring, Maryland, an employee of a local beer and wine store was shot and injured outside of the store, but lived.
Mm-hmm.
Then September 17th in Washington, D.C. Like, they're just fucking hopping around here.
Yeah.
Like, Maryland, Washington, D.C., whatever. September 17th in Washington, D.C., another liquor store worker by the name of Muhammad Rahid was locking up for the night when he was confronted by John, who shot him right in the stomach and stole his wallet.
In the stomach?
Yeah. He was, like, laying on the ground still alive, and he just jacked his wallet.
Oh, that's so fucked up.
I know. And he survived.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So we have a living witness.
Yeah.
Then September 20th in Atlanta, there was a shooting and a robbery. Then the next day, just a few hours away in Montgomery, Alabama, there was another shooting and robbery.
Okay.
So they're fucking busy.
Yeah. Also, they're like fucking down by Florida again.
Oh, yeah. They're just hopping all over the place.
Okay.
I think, and friends of John also think, that he's out to go find his family because he's looking for them actively and he can't find any information on them. So I'm wondering if he's thinking like, oh, she always said something about over here. So he's like going to the East Coast or I don't know. Yeah.
He's like actually looking for them and these other people are kind of just.
He's using to pay for his way.
Yeah. Oh, God. How sad.
So 3 days later, after the September 20th shooting, a woman by the name of Hong M. Bellinger was getting into her car in a parking lot of her work in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, when she was shot dead with a .223 caliber rifle. I think this is the Bushman AR-15. I don't know for sure, because I don't know guns that well.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems like a lot of caliber.
It is a lot of caliber. It's big.
During this time, John and Lee were staying at John's sister's house in Baton Rouge, so they were close by. And it was here that John told Lee his ultimate plan, where he wanted to extort the U.S. government for $10 million by randomly killing people around Washington, D.C.
Obviously.
He's like, I have a great idea. If I start killing people, they'll pay me to stop killing people.
Mm?
Mm? And Lee was like, great idea.
Profit?
Yeah. Yes. Sell? Anyway. His plan was then to use that money to change the world by buying a big compound in Canada or Africa and starting a utopian community of 70 black boys and 70 black girls. They would all be educated in the proper ways of Islam, and then when they became of age, they would be sent back out into the world to spread the word of Islam and help change the world for the better. It only takes 70 of each to do that.
Why 70?
No idea.
Also, where is he going to get them? Like recruits?
Parents are just going to be like, here's a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Put this one in your program.
Yeah, I'll take this. I have no idea. I have no idea. But like I said, friends close to John were like pretty sure that he's just saying that's his master plan of extortion, but really he's trying to find his ex.
Yeah.
And he's telling Lee that this is what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, well, he's also brainwashing him to think that, like, that's okay and
the world is after him and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so it makes more sense this way.
Exactly.
Like, to tell him that.
During this time also, John had found out where his ex was living in D.C., and he would often go stake out her house in her neighborhood with Lee. He would just sit in his little fucking car.
How fucking creepy.
And watch her. Witnesses in her neighborhood later came out and claimed that they saw John and his 1999 Chevrolet Caprice in the neighborhood on several occasions.
Ooh.
That's so creepy.
Yeah.
Now, Lee, when he was alone, would basically be himself, and he could be, like, self-directed or whatever. But if John was in the room, he became the robot, and he did what John told him to do.
Yeah.
Lee later confesses that the only way he was able to get through the crimes was by zoning out and just following the commands.
Oh, God.
And also the teachings he had endured at the hands of John taught him how to desensitize himself.
Yeah.
And, like, from the present moment and to discipline his emotions. Like, that's what John was teaching him in all of
these
things.
So he's just making a little murder bot.
Precisely.
But he's also doing murdering because John was the one that shot the store clerk in the stomach who lived.
John does, I think, a majority of the murdering.
Yeah.
And Lee just does it when he has to.
Oh, God, that's so fucking sad.
So Lee had realized what he was doing was wrong and he wanted out. And at one point, he contemplated suicide.
Oh, that's sad.
I know.
Oh, that poor kid. Like, you can't do that. That's fucked up. But also,
I feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was kind of dealt a real fucking shitty hand.
Shitty hand, yeah. So when they were in Baton Rouge at John's, like, cousin's house or whatever, I don't fucking remember, his family member's house, John's niece lived there also. And Lee became close with the niece. And he had written the niece a letter basically saying, like, I am doing terrible things. Like, I don't understand what's wrong with my life. Like, why did God deal me this hand? My life has been shit from the very beginning.
Aww.
And he had tried to kill himself in that house. He went into the bathroom with a gun and was going to shoot himself in the head. And he just couldn't bring himself to do it.
Oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Also in that letter, he was saying, like, you know, I was dealt such a shitty hand. I finally found somebody to help take me under their wing and care for me, and he's turning me into a killing machine. Like, what the fuck am I here for?
Yeah.
So here comes the shooting frenzy that John and Lee would go on. You thought that was bad. It's going to get worse. And the media, like, they would earn their media title of the DC Beltway Snipers.
Okay.
I knew it would all click into place. So here we go. The list of all the killings are like best guess scenario on who was shot first and whatever, because this is obviously put together by a massive investigation. But keep in mind that in each one of these shootings, Lee and John would hide in the trunk of that Chevrolet Caprice and they would shoot their victims from the trunk of this car. So I guess the back seat cover came off. And they would crawl into the trunk of the car, and they had hollowed out, like, a hole that was above the license plate into the side of the trunk lock on the back of the trunk. And that's where they were shooting their victims from. So nobody could ever tell, like, where the shooting or the bullets were coming from.
Oh, God.
So there were never any witnesses of the shooter or anything. And nobody fucking thought to think about a bullet coming from the back of a trunk of a car.
Yeah.
Right? So it took a while for investigators to catch these guys.
Okay.
Also, because of their method of sniper style assassination, they left behind very little evidence.
Yeah.
So, victim one, James Martin, who was a 55-year-old program analyst at NOAA, was killed on October 2nd, 2002, in a parking lot of a Shoppers Food Warehouse grocery store, which was located in Glenmont, Maryland, while he was walking across the lot with his shopping cart, just fucking shopping. Bam, shot.
How fucked up is that?
This whole thing is terrifying to me because, like, all of their victims were random.
Yeah.
Except for, like, Issa.
Yeah.
October 3rd, 2002, so the next day, at 7:40 a.m., the duo pulled up to an auto dealership right outside of Rockville, Maryland, and they parked just a few yards away up the street, and the back of the car was facing the dealership. And then, according to John says that Lee climbed into the back seat of the car. Now, I'll have you know, Lee says that John did it, so who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But says that Lee climbed into the back seat of the car, lifted that back seat cushion out, and they had like a hook or something that they could hang the cushion on so that it like hovered over the back floorboard. So obviously they planned this.
Yeah.
I mean, they cut out a fucking hole in the back, but they had this thing like retrofitted. He slid into the trunk of the Caprice where the gun was waiting for him. And then he put the Bushmaster AR-15 barrel through the hole, and he sat there watching his sights on a landscaper who was mowing the lawn of the dealership.
How fucked up.
He's at work, bro.
Yeah.
So this landscaper's name was 39-year-old James Sonny Bakkenen. he was just doing his fucking daily work. And according to John, Lee stayed in the trunk and waited for John's signal that it was time to shoot the target. And Sonny had just turned his back to them because he was mowing the lawn, right? So he was like turning a corner and turned his back to him. And that's when John gave him the signal and Lee pulled the trigger and ended up doing what they called a quote heart kill or heart shot.
Oh, God.
And they shot him between his left shoulder blade and his spine and killed him instantly. He's just fucking mowing a lawn.
Oh, God. How fucked up.
Nobody to witness anything. Like, he's just out there minding his, probably listening to music.
Yeah.
Doing his own fucking thing. Next, we have Prem Kumar Welekar, who was their third victim. And he was shot and killed on October 3rd, 2002, so the same day as Sonny, while he was pumping gas at an Aspen Hill area Montgomery County, Maryland gas station. Prem Kumar was a 54-year-old retired salesman who stayed busy driving a cab part-time, and he was born in Pune, India, and immigrated to the United States at the age of 18 for better educational opportunities. The shooter was later identified as John. As I say this, basically everybody that was shot, the shooter was identified as John, except for Sonny, which it's like questionable. It could have been Lee. But basically, I'm pretty sure John was doing all the shooting. I don't know how they determined this. I don't know if it came up in trial or whatever, but we obviously know in the story he's the like big villain.
Yeah, the mastermind behind all of this.
Mm-hmm. So Sarah Ramos was their next victim. She was killed on October 3rd also at 8:37 a.m. Like, these are back to back to back.
Yeah.
While sitting on a bench outside of the post office near Silver Spring, Maryland retirement community.
Oh, my God. How sad.
I know. Sarah was a 34-year-old housekeeper, babysitter, wife, and mother of a 7-year-old boy. She had gotten off the bus and was seated on the bench reading a book at the time of her murder.
How fucked up.
I know.
Why is he killing all, like,
random people.
Yeah. Everybody's just, like, a random average Joe. Like,
well, because his master plan is to, like, have these random killings that they can't solve, and he's going to extort the U.S. government for $10 million. Remember?
Yeah, I remember. But then go for the fucking wealthy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you're going to get a response.
That's how you're going to get a response.
Honestly, that's where he went wrong.
Not to say...
Okay, their fifth victim was Pascal Charlotte, who was shot and killed on October 3rd as well, while standing on a street corner in Washington, D.C.
My God.
He was a 72-year-old retired carpenter who had immigrated from Haiti, and he was on his way to a bus station when he was killed. Again, the shooter was John, and evidence later showed that the bullet that killed Pascal had been fired from John's Bushman rifle, which I'm sure there's several cases like that, but I found that this one was mentioned.
Yeah.
That they do get evidence from this guy. Lorianne Lewis Rivera was the next victim, and she was killed on October 4th, so the following day, while she was vacuuming her employer's minivan.
See? Why are you killing the fucking layman?
At a Shell gas station in Kingston, Maryland.
Why?
I know. I know.
These are people just working in fucking a place they don't want to be.
Right? I don't want to be vacuuming this bitch's van.
I don't want to be mowing the goddamn lawn.
No, I want to be inside enjoying my goddamn life.
Yeah.
Or outside. I don't know.
I mean, or outside either way. Or fucking vacuuming my own van.
Yeah, my own minivan.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Lori was a 25-year-old nanny and mother. She was shot in the back by John. Then we have Carolyn Sewell, who was the seventh victim, and she was shot in the back and injured on October 4th while she was sitting in her car at a parking lot in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Virginia?
Virginia? Virginia? Sorry. A little slip of the tongue there. Carolyn was a 43-year-old stay-at-home mother of two, and she was shopping at a craft store for a Halloween wreath and scarecrow, and girl got shot.
That's just sad.
I know. I'm like, I could be at Michael's too, bro.
Yeah.
Hobby Lobby, what you want to call it.
Yeah.
I could be there. I probably won't be getting a wreath, but that's okay.
Getting a wreath? That's a Halloween wreath, though. That sounds fun.
True.
And bitch, you made a wreath. Don't act like you're not a Pinterest mom.
I did not make it. I bought that, and then I wrapped some new shit around it that was in the $1 bin at Target. So.
I'm sorry. I heard.
Made it. Yeah. But I would be buying a scarecrow. That sounds cool as shit. I should have one in my front yard.
Honestly, you need one. You have sunflowers.
Yeah, honestly. Okay, so she was just in her car fucking enjoying her life when she got shot. She said that she...
Said that.
She survives.
Oh.
She said that she had heard the shot and then felt the pain instantly. And when she realized what had happened, she slid out of the car. Like, she was praying to God that she didn't die because she had two little babies. And she slid out of the car onto the pavement. And then she was, like, screaming in the parking lot for help. Like, somebody help me. But nobody believed that she had gotten shot. Because, I mean, it's crazy. Like, yeah, but, like, there's nobody out. Shoot, like, what are you talking about? But, I mean, I don't know if it made a sound.
Yeah, I was going to say someone must have heard it.
Maybe there was nobody in the parking lot. I don't know. But eventually, the people working at the craft store, the employees came out and helped call 911 to help her. And she had sustained two broken ribs, a damaged lung, and diaphragm in the shooting, but she survived. And she ends up testifying at John's trial.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Right? The bullet had pierced through her lower back and exited her chest just below her right breast.
Oh,
so
God.
She got lucky. Those are some major organs right there. Ugh. She was one of the three shooting victims to survive this whole spree. Their eighth victim was a 53-year-old civil engineer from Gaithersburg, Maryland, named Dean Harold Myers. He was shot and killed on October 9th, 2002 at around 8:15 p.m. while he was pumping gas at a Sunco station in Manassas, Virginia. He was the first victim in Virginia, I guess, because they were in Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C., the whole little area.
Yeah, okay.
Which scares me because I used to fucking live there.
Yeah.
Not that specific place in Virginia, but...
And not then.
But my dad used to work in Washington, D.C.
Oh, shit.
So we live pretty fucking close.
That's so fucking
but
scary.
This is 2002, and I lived there in, like, fucking 93, 94.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit of time.
Me back in 2002.
That's right, girl. Now, their ninth victim was Kenneth Bridges, and he was a 53-year-old businessman from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was shot and killed on October 11th, 2002, at around 9:30 a.m. while he was pumping gas at an Exxon station near an entrance to Interstate 95 in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Okay. Fucked up, man. They're targeting gas stations.
Yeah, ain't, why?
Ain't nobody safe. I bet it was easy to, like, be people conspicuous. Pull up all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're just another random car.
Right. The 10th victim and the final victim was Linda Franklin. She was a 47-year-old FBI intelligence analyst from Arlington, Virginia. Fucking right? Like, I don't know if she was targeted or if it was just fucking luck.
They were like, uh-oh, she might fucking catch us.
Yeah. She was shot and killed on October 14th, 2002 at around 9:15 p.m. while she and her husband were loading packages into their car in the parking lot of Home Depot.
Oh, no.
In Falls Church, Virginia. That's so scary that you, and like, it's not like anybody sees anybody with a gun. It's just a parked car.
Yeah.
And like, obviously knowing now you can see the hole in the trunk, but I sure. would never notice.
Yeah. I don't look at cars.
No. Also, I wonder what kind of angle you have to be at to not get somebody's fucking legs, you know?
Right.
Or well, how far away were they when they got shot?
Yeah, that's what I would think. Also, how big was the hole?
Like, it's kind of like a rectangle.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. Couple inches, like 3.5.
Yeah.
2.5. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's like 3.
3 inches long and like 1.5 inches wide.
Yeah.
Maybe 1 inch. I don't know. It's got a tall. Fit a barrel and a scope. Like, I don't know. There's pictures online. I'm sure Critty will post on our social media.
Nice.
The Beltway sniper shooting spree lasted for 21 days.
God damn.
When on October 24th, 2002, federal and local law enforcement arrested John and Lee as they slept in the car, that same fucking car, on a highway rest area on I-70 in Frederick County, Maryland. So they didn't fucking flee. They were staying around this area in Washington, D.C. area where his fucking ex-wife and children lived.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he was just like waiting.
Waiting for to see her. Mm. And then you have all these other random killings and then it wouldn't be traced back to him because exactly. she's just a victim of a random.
Mm-mm, don't like that. At one crime scene, they left a death tarot card with a note on the back that read, quote, "For you, Mr. Police, code... colon, call me God, do not release to the press." So they start taunting the police.
Mm-hmm.
Because how else are they going to get their $2 million, right?
Yeah, like, of course.
You got to send the message of like...
They have to know how to contact them.
Exactly.
How'd the police know it was them in the Chevy?
So, I'll tell you.
Okay.
John and Lee had actually left several notes at many of the crime scenes, basically trying to extort the government for the $10 million and threatening to kill, like, people's children's and shit. They were like,
oh, God.
To the investigators, like, your children aren't safe. Like, they're trying to incite fear so that they'll, like, listen to their commands.
Yeah.
Give me $10 million. A month or so earlier, John had actually called the police taunting them, saying that he was the one responsible for the murder of two women at a liquor store in Montgomery, Alabama. So it was like an unsolved murder. And he was like, that was me. And it was him. This, along with the consistent eyewitnesses of the blue Chevy Caprice and the notes left at the scene, led the authorities to Lee and John. So they were able to find him.
Oh, my God. So yeah. They were just fucking dumb.
Yeah, they were dumb. And the police probably got lucky in some sense.
Yeah. You
know? Like, they're like, okay, the bullets are matching.
Yeah.
And people keep seeing this blue Chevy Caprice, so keep mellow. And then they see some people sleeping in a car, and they're like, the fuck, yo?
That's a blue Chevy Caprice that these bitches are sleeping in.
I see a hole in the back of that trunk.
This seems suspicious.
Mm-hmm. After Lee's arrest, it was clear that he had been brainwashed by John. He told people that they were so close to getting that $10 million and that he really believed that they were going to get away with it. Like, he was, like, slamming his fists on the table when, like, friends and family would visit him in prison or whatever. And he was like, we were so close. And they're like, God. You were not.
Yeah.
There was no way you were going to get any money. Like, they didn't even fucking realize they were connected. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So John must have been, like, spewing a bunch of shit to him.
I'm sure.
Well, they knew they were connected. But you know what I mean. Like, yeah. It wasn't like... John really thought they were about to get that fucking briefcase of money or some shit.
Yeah, no one was in communications, negotiations with millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. No way.
So where do you drop it off? Because I'll just arrest you then.
Maybe that's what happened. I don't really know.
Wire transfer. Does that exist in 2002?
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Yeah. It's existed for a while, I'm pretty sure. So anyway, since John's arrest, he remained silent, except for one time he spoke up in trial, but it was basically a bunch of, like, unhinged ramblings about his radical politics, and it was barely about the actual crime itself.
Oh, God.
So they were probably like, let's not let him take the stand anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but that's what I would say.
He seems a little unhinged.
Yeah, I don't think it's smart for him to talk.
You know, he really loses ya when he opens his mouth.
Yeah, it's not going to help his situation.
Uh-huh.
On November 17th, 2003, John was convicted of two counts of capital murder, and he was sentenced to death and was executed in 2009. Now, I'm pretty sure he actually got sentenced to a bunch of other counts of death or whatever. Okay. You know, like, there was a lot of murders here.
But, yeah.
You know, he gets the death penalty. He's put in jail prison for a long, long time.
Okay.
So John's last meal, well, not that long because he was executed in 2009, but his last meal was chicken with red sauce and cake, and he declined to make any last statements. So we really don't know that much from John's perspective. All we have is what Lee says. So Lee was tried on two counts of murder for the murder of 47-year-old Linda Franklin at the Home Depot parking lot in Falls Church, Virginia. And I guess they tried him for this murder first because Virginia has, like... It's, like, one of 19 states that allows for the execution of juveniles. So they were like, let's do this one first and see if we can get the death penalty.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. On December 18th, 2003, he was convicted and sentenced to just life in prison. But he got, like, multiple life sentences. I think it was, like, six other life sentences or something like that.
Yeah.
For all the other murders he committed. In prison, he worked with a therapist to gain his identity back. And he now speaks with his Jamaican accent again because he had lost it in working with John.
Oh my
like,
God.
On purpose.
Yeah.
And I guess all people's accounts were like, you wouldn't know he was from Jamaica. Like, he was really good at faking it.
Wow.
In fact, in Jamaica, when he was living with John, John would tell everybody in the neighborhood, like, this is my son, Lee. And John was from the United States. So whenever Lee would talk, there was this one couple at, like, an electronics store that had caught Lee making a comment, like, that is common in Jamaica. Like, I don't remember what it was. Like, something like, it's mine or something like that. But she stopped and looked at him and was like, you're not from America. Like, you're Jamaican.
Oh.
And they just kind of dropped it. So, like, he was really changing his identity to be. Yeah. He was literally a different person.
Yeah, he's trying to be John's son.
Exactly. So he gained back his identity in working with therapy. He attended college and he basically got all A's in prison. He did admit to having trouble sleeping at night because those tapes would play in his ear all the time. So he'd wake up in the morning angry and, like, with all of these beliefs of these radical ideas again. So, like, people would visit him and he'd be, like, really remorseful and really upset because he's like, I got dealt a shitty hand. Like, I get why I'm here. I deserve to be here. But, like, it's not my fault entirely. I was tricked, basically. I was brainwashed.
Yeah.
And then the next day, he'd be, like, rambling all this spewing hate and bullshit again. And the people would be like, what the fuck, man? Like, you're not like that. And he'd be like, I know. It's, like, in my head when I go to sleep, this shit, it's just, like, I've been conditioned.
You couldn't give him, like, fucking happy shit to fall asleep to?
I don't know. Maybe they should.
Let's try and, like, counter that.
Well, remember, prison isn't really about reform around here.
That's true.
They're just like, you stay over there and stop it.
Ew, don't like that behavior. More time.
Yeah, exactly. So Lee realizes he will be in prison for the remainder of his life, but as his old personality returns, he says he wants to make a positive impact on the world from prison, and he just doesn't know what that is yet. He also has appealed for, like, parole or some shit. I think it was, like, in pretty recent, like, in the 2020s. He like, was brought up for parole but denied, so I doubt he'll ever get out.
Oof.
And I actually didn't know any of the shit about any of the fucking... before? Yeah.
I've seen a documentary on it, and I didn't know anything about the before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't even seen a documentary on it. See, I just remember my dad being like, oh, shit, it's crazy. Like, you don't want to be driving on the freeways. There's somebody shooting people from the freeways. That's how he explained it to me. And I was like, that is terrifying. But yeah. Then he said it was in D.C. because we used to live there, right? So he's still tied. Like, he's got people there he knows and shit. And I was like, well, then I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
And he's like,
Dad, I don't care about that at all.
Yeah. I was like,
sorry, your 13? Friends are in danger.
I was like 13. I didn't realize what was going on.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And then, and then it came out that they were shooting. I remember my dad was the one to tell me. Obviously, I wasn't reading the news and shit
yeah.
at 13, and we barely had the internet.
Exactly.
And he was the one to tell me that they were shooting it from the trunk of the car, and I just remember being like, what the actual fuck? That sounds hard and scary. Hot. Like, you would never yeah. know.
Yeah.
It was December, so it was cold.
Oh, fair.
Anyway, that is the story of the Beltway Snipers.
Well, that's terrifying.
Yep.
Thanks for that.
Hey, you're welcome. Sorry that took a million years, but if you want to check out pictures pertaining to this case, go to isgdpodcast.com. Nope, don't go there, because there's nothing there yet, but there will be.
Probably.
Someday. We're starting to get our shit together.
We're starting.
I've been doing a lot of podcast shit.
Yeah, you
have. I talk to people.
You have. I started the website thing and updating it, and then I got nasty messages from somebody, and so then I went down a rabbit hole.
You did?
Yeah, you were there.
I don't remember this.
It's okay.
Okay, anyway.
And then I went down that rabbit hole instead of finishing.
Yeah, smart.
I was like, I'll engage.
Oh. If you would like to check out pictures pertaining to this case, go to our social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Our handle is at ISGD Podcast. If you want to leave us a review, please do that. That'd be awesome and great. Even if you just star us, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
5 stars is preferable, but you could be honest. I don't give a flying fuck. I just want to know what you guys think. Also, you can email us at isgdpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to snail mail us, you can do that at
P.O. Box 2764, Spring Valley, California,
91979. And my friends, that is all.
That's it and that's all.
Mm-hmm. Toodle noodles.
Bye.
Oh, I got to do your trick. Swing out. Don't push it.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, it feels so risky.
Yours might be.
Oh, it's so hot.
It's real hot. Turn that fan on.
Oh, you got it, girl. Let me just stop this shit.